Technorama episode 551, gather around the Festivus pole.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hello, I am here to insert witty comment here.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. You are in for a rare treat. It's the holiday season and we are ready to celebrate. My name is Chuck Tomasi. Oh, and if you're coming back, yeah, thanks. Thanks again for returning to Technorama.
The podcast for geeks.
We'll get there in a second.
Oh,
hold on. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Wow, I see we're already off the rails. Cool.
We're
out of the way early.
And joining us in the binary studio are the TG Geeks, Keith Lane.
Hey, how are you?
And Ben Regatton.
There are no rails.
Without rails.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. The railless railroad.
Railless railroad.
Woo!
Yeah, woo woo.
Woo woo is right.
Let us get started. Woo. We have feedback. Letters, no letters. Wherefore out there.
Oh, we get letters.
Sing along, everybody.
Every day.
Every day, it's a little closer, going faster than a roller coaster.
Oh, Enter's lay.
Oh my gosh, are these
oh
all?
Boy.
Are
these all oh my planets? Word!
Holy criminy!
Oh, that's a lot of feedback.
A lot. Craig that's knows how to pick them, doesn't he?
Oh yeah.
We asked you last week, actually we asked a couple days ago on Facebook, what geeky / tech thing are you thankful for? And there's no way we're going to be able to read all 52 of these in this show. We would have had to have a separate feedback show, which we haven't done in a while. Brian Kennedy says,
I don't think you're going to read Evos.
Two things come to mind. He says, electricity, without which tech wouldn't be what it is today. Number two, the internet, with which I've made a plethora of friends and acquaintances that I wouldn't have been able to make otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Kent Mike Lee, my former jiu-jitsu instructor and coworker, Wi-Fi, DVR streaming, and all that technology we've so quickly taken for granted.
Yeah.
That is true. Don McAuliffe says, geeky tech guys to fix my electronics, which makes total sense. Another longtime friend, Barbara, says, all the various high-tech medical devices and advancements that have made huge differences in me and my family's lives. And I completely concurred with that,
having taken
advantage of it many times in the last few years. Joe Schwartz says, I'm thankful for you, Chuck.
Like, oh, incorrect.
Was that Kosh?
Yes.
You just gave me a Kosh? He said something intelligent and straightforward.
Yeah.
Now, Kosh usually says things like, the rainbows are over the water.
Or something equally as absurd.
Like, okay, Kosh, you keep smoking that good smoke in your studio there.
It's like usually sounds like Picard trying to talk to, what's your name on the, you know.
Darmok.
Yeah, Darmok and Jalad.
Kosh was a Darmok guy.
Yeah,
he was. Could have been. He was just telling his old
stories.
It was
stories. All metaphors?
Yeah, Darmok could be.
Lucy and Ethel in the candy shop.
And Tanagra.
I don't even want to know what story he's referring to there.
You don't want to know.
Is that the Vorlon way for saying, you know, go to the local marijuana store for your daily dose?
That's right.
T. Morris surprisingly said, podcasting and streaming. Oh, he has the I Love Lucy.
I forgot.
He brought his own soundboard, and I challenged him on a few of these things. I'm not trying to set you up here. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.
I've lost all track of where they are because he has a brand new soundboard.
Scott Tyler says he's thankful for Google.
Google or overlords.
Mike Stockman, my new Mac Mini 7 i7 16 gig of RAM 2 terabyte drive.
Oh,
yay.
Michael Slobodnik does a throwback and says, my Diamond Rio PMP300, the first commercial MP3 player that I can remember.
Oh, dear.
Music has never been the same.
Yeah.
What did that have? 64 meg on it? You could hold about 13 songs.
Yeah, I remember. Really? Oh, man, I remember my first MP3 player.
Yeah, I had a Diamond Rio, too. God, I love that thing. It's fantastic.
Like a knockoff. Let's see. What else?
Toilets.
Craig says toilets. You got to admit. Their technology and civilization wouldn't be where it is.
That's true.
Hey, you wouldn't be where you are.
Is that technology?
No, I'd be in an outhouse.
That didn't work. Never mind. That's a fleeting thought. Never mind.
Grant Pachoco says, podcasting. And Megan Endlow says, so many voices in my head. At least most of them are real.
Yeah. Awooga.
There's the Bantha warning again. Who else do we have? We have,
Billy Flynn says, my Switch is awesome.
You mean the light Switch?
No, the Nintendo Switch.
I know. My dad chimed in on this one. He says, I'm thankful for my son, Chuck, who is a very geeky, techie thing who bails me out when I have techie problems.
Wonder which son he's referring to.
He says, my son Chuck.
He's got several to choose from.
Yes, he does. He's got four to choose from. Clinton Alvarez at the tape recorder. For me, it all started there. Amen, brother.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I tell you.
I would agree with that. Yep.
A lot of podcasters and creative audio people have.
I kept Maxell in business for quite a while.
I did too.
And TDK. Give them credit too.
You guys, you interviewed a number of people who gave that same kind of story. That their origins were in the, you know, the tape recorder, playing with recording and mixing kind of things. That's a very common theme, I'm finding.
I don't remember who that was.
Palmer.
Robert Palmer?
Robert Palmer.
Right.
And several other people.
That Robert Palmer?
No,
not that Robert Palmer.
I was just thinking the same thing. Oh, that Robert Palmer?
Not that Robert Palmer.
Which is a great segue into our next piece of feedback. We have a letter from John Noble.
John Noble?
At John Noble?
And listen, wait for the sign-off. Wait for it. He says, I was listening to you guys talk about going to the terminal window for Max, and it reminded me of an event. I was visiting my older son's office, and he mentioned that his Mac wasn't doing updates. Since I've worked for years on Unix and Linux machines, I popped open a terminal window and found where the Mac stored the downloads for the updates. I deleted the recent update files and emptied the trash can. Next, well, if you did an RM, you don't have to empty the trash can, but good for you. Next, I hit the update button, and lo and behold, the updates began pouring in and installing. He was shocked that I could fix Macs and asked how I knew what to do. I just told him,
in all fairness, he let him on the machine to fix it.
Hey.
I'm shocked.
I just told him when there is a problem, you just have to pop open the hood and find the right wire to plug in. Yeah, it's a little sad that a large portion of the new generation don't know what's going on behind the curtain of many machines. Because they like the shiny GUI.
Yep.
And he signs off. He says, yes, that John Noble.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Or as I like to say now, yes, our John Noble.
Yeah, right.
All right. We rolled them. It goes Chuck, Ben, Craig.
Keith.
I'm last.
You can't really, on the screen, it's not going to make any sense, but I've visually done it in the studio. So yeah. I can visually see it. Let's go. There we go. On this day in history for November 28, 2018, this is the 332nd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are just 33 days remaining in 2018. It was on this date in 1520 that, coincidentally, the expedition under the command of Ferdinand Magellan passes through the Strait of Magellan.
Hey, they named us.
Imagine that.
Steer over there, Ferdinand. We get free pass because your name is on.
That's right. Yeah. That same date in 1660, at Gresham College, 12 men, including Christopher Wren, Robert Boyle, John Wilkins and Sir Robert Moray decide to found what is later known as the Royal Society.
It was 204 years ago today that the Times of London becomes the first newspaper to be produced on a steam-powered, sorry, I just love that, printing press built by the German team of Koenig and Bauer.
On November 28th, 1895, the first American automobile race takes place over the 54 miles from Chicago's Jackson Park to Evanston, Illinois. Frank Duryea wins in approximately 10 hours.
54 miles, 10 hours. You do the math. I forget they broke
Holy
down a lot.
Holy moly.
This is 1895, you know.
Well, that's true. They could have locked that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's a long trip. That same date in 1925, the Grand Ole Opry begins broadcasting in Nashville, Tennessee as the WSM Barn Dance.
The Barn Dance.
NASA launches the Mariner 4 probe towards Mars on this date in 1964.
I like that. It was towards Mars.
Towards Mars.
Towards.
Yeah.
Towards. In that direction.
Yeah.
And on November 28th, 1967, the first Pulsar, PSR B1919 plus 21, bingo!
Why didn't they just say 1940 instead of 1919?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the constellation of Vulpecula was discovered by two astronomers, Jocelyn Bell Burnell and Antony Hewish.
The Vulpecula sounds like an anatomical piece.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, sounds like a name for vampire.
Where's your Vulpecula?
My left one or my right one?
Happy birthday goes out on this date to Flemish captain and explorer.
Wow. Yes, explorer.
Now we're in trouble.
Willem de Vlaminck, born on this date in 1640.
You need more phlegm.
Willem de Vlaminck.
Flaming.
Nathaniel Bliss, the English astronomer and mathematician, was born on the same date in 1700.
Luke Howard, the English chemist and meteorologist, was born 256 years 46. Ago today.
246.
Sorry.
Eggnog.
Yeah, eggnog.
I don't think he cares anymore. Hey, I don't think he cares anymore. Born November 28th, 1805, American archaeologist and explorer John Lloyd Stevens.
English. No, there you go. So it was my turn. Sorry.
English engineer and architect William Froude was born 208 years ago today.
John Wesley Hyatt, that John Wesley Hyatt?
Yes.
The American engineer was born that same date in 1837.
English chemist and academic Cliff Addison was born 105 years ago today.
American physicist, novelist, and academician Alan Lightman,
academian?
Born on this
date.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Academian, that's what it
says. That's putting cookies.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed the C in there. Academician or whatever. Anyway, Alan Lightman. Born on this date in 1948.
Academy magician.
Yeah, there we go. Also born
what is
on that
actually?
Same date in 1949.
All right.
Canadian-American singer, keyboard player, and band leader, CBS Orchestra, Paul Schaefer.
Play that Paul Schaefer tune I told you to earlier.
Where are
I
we?
Remember.
Where's my
Paul You Schaefer weren't
tune?
Ready.
Which one?
Was it Nightclub or something?
Not that one.
No, not that one.
That one.
Come
fly That's not
me.
It.
Yeah, no, not that one.
No.
Was it?
I feel like we're punching buttons.
It's one of our intro music.
Paul Schaefer.
Oh, hang on.
For our own show.
There we are. Hang on. Back. There we go.
We're going to get this.
Where is it?
No.
Not that one?
No.
No, that was, oh yeah, Coma, that was safe. That one.
That's the one.
There we go. Holy.
That took the right
one. It's painful.
There you go.
Happy birthday, Paul Schaefer. You get a whole bunch of extra songs.
Oh, Lord.
Also turning 68 today is American physicist and astronomer, Nobel Prize laureate, Russell Allen Hulse. Play the Russell Allen Hulse. No, never mind.
Don't. No.
Oh, you scared me.
American educator and astronaut, Barbara Morgan, born in the state in 1951.
And American actor, screenwriter, Judd Nelson is 59 today.
Also turning 56 today is American comedian, actor, and television host, Jon Stewart.
And that's The Daily Show for today. Listener birthdays on this date include November 28th, our good coworker at ServiceNow, Ben Sweetser. December also has a couple of birthdays for us. Claudio Miranda, long-time listener, and Ben Frixell from the Mac Mania podcast is on the 2nd. Thank you to both of you. If you want to get on the birthday calendar, go over to our calendar at chuckchat.com/wiki, as you see right there on the screen. That's the way it was on this day in history for November 28th, 2018. How did we finish that up before the music let out?
You paused it.
You didn't have to.
No, I didn't pause. That was faded down. That's the crazy part.
I thought you
paused it. Maybe this is the end.
No.
Wait.
Wait for it.
Here comes.
3 weeks later.
Yes! I have so many loops in this song, I don't remember where the end is. It's like wandering around in an escape room without a plan.
Yeah. All right, take us out. Bah, 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 bah.
Hey, I got one of those. Is it the same one? Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Same pitch.
Yeah. I think yours is slightly higher pitch.
No, it isn't. Is it? It's identical.
Mine got tuned up.
Yes.
I cleaned the spit valve.
Yeah, there you go. That's kind of like right. Florence Foster Jenkins. She said,
yeah,
after I was in that car wreck, my A flat is a little higher now.
Yeah, see your doctor.
Yeah, the beginning yeah. F note on Chuck's is a higher F than Keith's.
Kudos to Ben for knowing it was an F. Beyond me. All right, it's news time. We have... Oh, let's see. What kind of news is this? Here.
Actually, by the time, nobody's.
Yeah, by the time you actually
select,
you actually
clip.
Hear this podcast,
yes.
I think the lander will already be there when, in whatever form it takes. Whatever.
We should roll anyway, to see who did it. Craig, go ahead. You can start the
I'll
game.
Go ahead and start this. Because I put the article in there and I started thinking, well, actually, it lands on Monday, which we're recording this on Sunday. But anyway, so NASA's newest Martian lander is slated to do groundbreaking geologic research on the red planet. But first, it has to touch down on and this coming past Monday. And landing on Mars is no easy feat. Despite a string of recent NASA successes, the overall success rate for Martian landings is about 40%.
Didn't know that.
That's not a good betting
subscribe to
episode.
Gizmodo.
Yeah. The InSight lander will once again face the perilous Martian atmosphere and surface in its quest to study the ground beneath the Martian surface and hopefully detect Mars quakes.
Mars quakes?
Yeah, Mars quakes. Anytime you're trying to land on another planet, it's very exciting. Tom Hoffman, InSight project manager at NASA, told Gizmodo, "For InSight, that's no different. There are so many challenges we have to overcome to successfully land. InSight, or the interior exploration using seismic investigations."
These acronyms are killing me.
Wow. Yeah.
Interior exploration using seismic investigations, geodesy, and heat transport.
Yeah, for crying out loud.
They're the best, aren't they?
Yeah. That's right. It launched this past May from the West Coast and is slated to touch down on Monday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time. So if you're watching this while we're streaming, be sure to check that out tomorrow. It is equipped with three tools. I was starting to read three cool tools.
Three cool tools.
For studying the planet.
Get away from a seismometer
for measuring sound waves traveling through the ground. A heat probe that measures how heat flows beneath the Martian surface, and a radio antenna to measure the changing location of the planet's north pole to indirectly study its core.
Hmm.
Those instruments will arrive on a platform nearly identical to the previous Phoenix landers to transport the instruments to the Martian surface.
Hmm. Wow. So how are they going to keep it from crashing, Craig?
So the InSight team worked very hard to prepare the lander for these various challenges. InSight will land at a higher elevation than Phoenix and will thus have less time to slow down. So the team has strengthened its parachute. Hoffman told Gizmodo that the team was unable to break the parachute in a wind tunnel. And if it's like that one, I wonder if it's like that one test I just saw recently. It was a video they were doing. Anyway, we'll talk about it in a minute. It will then fire rockets in order to ease itself to the surface. Once it lands, InSight will immediately take a picture of the Martian surface, and scientists will get to work on deciding where to put the instruments. So it's going to do a parachute, a strong parachute, then fire rockets and slow down.
I wonder why they didn't go with the sky crane.
Yeah, because that worked really well last time.
Yeah.
I thought it did too, because there was so much hype about, hey, we'll see what happens, and it worked. So
maybe it was too risky, or there were some other variables this time that weren't involved last time.
Sounds like a...
Well, they did. They did say they were landing at a higher elevation.
Landing at a higher elevation. You mean
landing on top of a mountain?
We measure elevation from sea level. There's no sea.
Yeah, previous sea level.
But where's the old seashore?
Well, the only thing I can think of is maybe the landing point will be somewhere higher than where they've landed previously.
Yeah.
Instead of in a valley, or maybe.
Does that mean there's less atmosphere to slow it down?
Well, that's what they're saying, that it's going to be thinner.
Oh, okay.
Maybe the water is going to automatically appear.
It says it will land at a higher elevation than Phoenix did. And
Phoenix is about, 1,100 square
feet? And we'll have thus less time to slow down. So the team strength parachute. I think what happened is there was enough ground or enough space between the ground, they could use a sky crane and slow down and then do its thing. Here, I think it might be a little too higher. I don't know. Maybe that's...
But a sky crane didn't need a whole lot of atmosphere, though. That was the point. You weren't relying on the parachutes to slow it down. You got to a certain... certain altitude, and then fired the rockets and lowered the thing, and then the sky crane went off and crashed.
Well, they did say they improved the parachute, so maybe there's no need for the sky crane anymore. Mm. But there,
that's true.
I did see a demo of a parachute that they were using. They were going to put in service, but it may be this one that they were testing on here on Earth, and it's pretty impressive.
Hmm.
Interesting.
It is interesting. We're going to keep an eye on that.
Yeah. We'll let you know what happens Monday.
We will. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back with Hacks and Strange Stories and some rather interesting Christmas poetry.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, something from the Geek Library. So stick around. We'll be right back. We love you, too.
Greetings, programs
and applications.
I'm Ben.
And I am Keith, and we are
the Two Gay Geeks. We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
Hi, this is Dean Hagel from The X-Files, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
I want to believe.
Camera.
Technorama.
No. It can stay in the foreground. There we are.
There we are.
Okay.
Sorry, we noticed Ben's camera is focused a little bit on the wall instead of on him. Into focus.
I thought we were focused on Superman right there.
That's a problem.
We want to focus on the Superman in the foreground.
Who?
The wildest ride in the potosphere.
Hey, before we move on, I want to ask Ben and Keith something.
What?
I know we just played the promo for your show, but can you tell us a little more what y'all do and what have y'all been doing as far as interviews, because I know y'all have been busy.
Oh, my
Keith,
Lord.
Keith, you take it.
What have we been doing in the last week or so?
Yeah, what have you been up to, and what's going on with
been
your show?
Up to?
Holy moly.
That's a pretty full question.
We have just programmed 47 days worth of content. It's all scheduled. It is all recorded. It's all...
Wow.
So we can take a vacation.
Yeah, we're going to take a vacation. So we've got 7 podcasts. We got 7 new sushis. We got 7 Dr. Zombies. And we have lots of movie reviews, mostly holiday content. So that's what we've been doing. Is that what you wanted?
Or do you want to give a sneak preview to some of the people we're going to be talking to?
I know y'all do a lot of interviews and stuff. You got anything you want to share?
Well, we have our 200th episode coming up on the 17th, December 17th. And that's kind of a big deal for us. We also got, let's see, the El Salamans coming up.
Yeah. 200.
Ah, 200, yeah.
200, yeah.
And who else? What?
Did we have the advocate people yet?
Oh, no, that's on December 31st. We are interviewing Billy Clift and
David
Milburn, who are the filmmakers of a film that's called...
Road to Freedom.
Road to Freedom. It's a 50th anniversary of the Advocate magazine and how that all came about and how the Advocate magazine actually was launched and the riots prior to the Stonewall riots that happened in California. And we let's see, who else? Gene Koch we've got. And
got an actor named Matt Hayes out of L.A. We're going to be interviewing.
In January. Just lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff.
Busy, busy, busy.
Busy, yeah, busy.
Absolutely. I mean, can't keep track of it all anymore.
Absolutely.
All right. Back to our show.
Back to our show.
Meanwhile, back in the binary studio.
Well, I know we played their promo.
In the hall of episodes.
Go ahead.
I know we played their promo, but I was like, you know, I thought, you know, let's
A live promo. We don't more, get those too often.
Wow.
Figured everybody might want to know a little bit more what they're doing. So, yeah. Okay.
Our big thing is interviewing independent creators. Yeah, if anybody wants to know,
that's a big thing. And I want to say a shout out to everybody that has been helpful in us being successful.
Yeah, because our show has really year has grown a lot
tremendously.
That's okay, awesome.
Especially
you're welcome. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I'll take that back. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Ben, would you like this next story?
Not really, because I can't pronounce those names.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got to get this thing to scroll. What's going on?
Scroll.
Hey, Ben, I think I clicked the Slack ad.
Hey, that whole name thing, that's my line.
You clicked on the Slack ad.
I think the ads are still loading. There we go.
When will y'all put uBlock on your browser?
Kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
Grief.
It's painful.
Boy.
At least I got a scroll bar. I can latch onto that, I hope.
I've been looking at the article for five minutes.
This is agonizing.
I think we're done with the agonizing.
Okay. Seeing Zhang Zhu towering over her classmates at the Cultural East Road Primary School in, is that Jinan, China?
Close enough.
It's hard to believe that they're all in the sixth grade. The 11-year-old already measures 6'7" or 210 centimeters, and many believe she's the tallest girl in the world. Zhang's parents are both former professional basketball players, and they're both over 2 meters tall, so it's pretty clear that genetics played an important role in her physical development.
But why would it kick in at the age of 11?
That's a little early. It's usually a little later.
27 feet tall.
That's got to be growing pains to beat the band.
It usually happens a little bit later than that. But reaching 210 centimeters by age 11 is still very unusual. Zhang has always been taller than all of the other children, and one of her colleagues remembers that in the first grade, she already stood at 1.6 meters or 5 feet 3 inches tall.
Wow.
That's already considerably taller than the average Chinese sixth grade girl at 4 feet 6 inches or 1.38 meters.
Wow.
That's tall. And there's a photo. And oh my God, she's like twice the size.
Yeah, and when you watch the video, it almost looked like she's a little knock-kneed or something, too, because the bone structure doesn't look like it's quite aligned for
and the body's not supposed to grow at that kind of rate that early. It's not actually not healthy.
That's what I'm thinking, kind of thinking. Too.
So I'm sure she's got problems right now. Her body's not been able to catch up. But forget about the other 11-year-olds. At her tender age, Zhang is already 3 inches taller than the average NBA player. Good grief. And 2 inches taller than her idol, LeBron James, who stands at just 6'8". What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? She's already been dubbed the female Yao Ming after the legendary Chinese basketball player who spent most of his professional career playing for the Houston Rockets. And he stands at a whopping 2.29 meters. But that's not right. Millimeters. 2.29. Oh, yeah, it is right. 2.29 meters. But if Zhang's growth rate remains constant, which it won't, it's not that unlikely that she will one day surpass him, too. It's going to change, I imagine.
Well, I hope so.
I hope so for her own benefit. Yeah. She was six. Yeah. She was 1.6 meters or 3 feet, 3 inches in her first years. We've been growing for 6 years, but still aren't as tall as she was in grade one, a boy at Zhang's school said in a peer video. She's younger than I am by a few months, but she has to bend down to talk to me, another student said.
What? I can't hear you from up here.
I know. That is, can you see me through the clouds? Yeah. I mean, like her parents, Zhang Zhu is reportedly a very talented basketball player.
That's good.
I would hope so. And maybe the playing is actually benefiting her by strengthening her muscles and maybe strengthening her bones at the same time.
Yeah.
Her mother said that when she first took Zhang to a basketball court to see her father train, she asked to get on the court to play. When her father tried to shoot the ball at the basket, Zhang instinctively raised her arms and adopted the same defensive posture that professional players do, despite knowing nothing about the game.
Huh.
Hmm. That's when her mother knew that Zhang was a natural and signed her up for basketball training. Now, the current Guinness record for tallest girl in the world is currently held by Sophie Hollins, a 12-year-old girl from Southampton, England, who at 6 feet 2 inches, or 1.88 meters, is several inches shorter than Zhang. It's unclear if the Chinese girl's family plans to make a bid for the title.
Why not?
Why not indeed
at this
point?
Pretty self-evident at this point.
I know. That's just crazy. And I got to think that there's got to be some health issues, because I remember hearing about people, you know, that had these massive growth spurts that have suffered serious problems right around as they're, you know, getting to their early teen years.
Well, and the tallest man in the world, Robert Waldo.
He was over 8 feet.
He had health issues as well.
Yeah. Major health issues.
Yeah. And he died at a fairly young age.
Yeah, he did.
I hope everything goes well, and that, you know, we live in a different medical era than he lived in as well. So hopefully, things calm down and she can build up that muscle strength and cardio and whatnot, that everything goes
especially the cardio portion, because that's a lot of blood to deliver throughout the body.
At that age as well.
Yeah, it's not designed for that yet.
That's true.
All right. We invite you to watch us on Facebook every Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern Time. We look forward to seeing you there. If you want, you can follow the page, Technorama Podcast, and get notified automatically as we do that. You can also subscribe to our Facebook. We post this up the very next morning, and you get notification there. We are working on streaming simultaneously and getting around that whole Facebook
Don't say it too loud.
Yeah. Shh.
Well,
no, I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm just not using two APIs at the same time. I was reading up on this. It was an experiment. Didn't quite work out tonight, but we're going to keep on that. All right. For the Remember When segment. Oh, boy.
Wait a
minute. Yes.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Shout out to the chat room.
Did we give a shout out to the chat room? I'm sorry. We did not. Let's take a look.
We got Donna Tomasi.
John Miller Jr.
She's a new one. I'm just kidding.
Clinton Alvord.
Clinton Alvord. Doug Schulze from work.
Michael King.
Why is it? You know what? I really don't like this Facebook thing.
No, I don't either. It doesn't tell you the truth of who's actually in the chat.
It's not the truth.
Yeah, it says Craig Stepp, Clinton Alvord, and three other people. And the rest.
And the rest.
Who else do we have? Watching now, we have the people we already mentioned.
The usual suspects.
These are the pick these people from the chat room lineup. Yeah, that's what we checked the comments. Yep. You said, all right. So thank you for watching, and we hope to see you there. If you're watching this later, thank you very much for that as well. Now, can we do the song masher?
Yeah.
It's holiday time here at the Binary Studios, and we have a new treat for you. We've taken song lyrics. This time we've taken the old Christmas favorite, Christmas is Coming. Just the first verse. Actually, I think there only is one verse. And we've translated it from English to Norwegian, then to Croatian, Hungarian, Finnish, Serbian. Yes, we finished our Serbian early. Chinese traditional, Haitian Creole, Bengali, and back to English. And this rare treat is what we came up with. Okay, fade that one down. That was a quick fade.
Yeah, it was a stop.
Stop.
Reciting the nursery rhyme Christmas is Coming. Everyone, please welcome the word Mayinger. I mean, word Maven. Word Mangler 3000.
Thank you. Clears throat. Oops, I wasn't supposed to read that. I am programmed to translate any word or phrase from English, to over any of 3 million languages and dialects, and back. And now, I shall translate Christmas is coming. Downloading translation. 2%. 20%. 60%. 20%. 80%.
What?
Download complete.
Something wrong with the download feed.
Christmas is coming, sugar cane increases. Place your old cap pen. If there is a crown, happeny.
Happeny.
If happeny. You do not know, then God bless you.
I don't know a thing, so God bless me. That was awesome. Wordy McWordface. So the original, of course, is Christmas is coming. The geese are getting fat. Please put a penny in the old man's hat. If you haven't got a penny, a hey penny will do. If you haven't got a hey penny, then God bless you. But of course,
happening.
When you translate it a few times, you get Christmas is coming, sugar cane increases.
I know.
That one's amazing.
There's an economic theory in there somewhere. Place your old cap pen.
Okay.
It doesn't understand the currency of penny.
No, apparently not. If there is a crown, happeny.
Interesting that it would take penny and then translate it to a crown. That's interesting.
If you Epony. Do not know, then God bless you.
If you do not know.
We're going to keep bringing that to you through the holiday season. I'm pretty sure we've got plenty more Christmas songs to do. Craig, you were talking about doing the Dog Days of Advent. I'm going to read these out loud. I'm going to do a song a day.
There you go.
This was actually inspired by Dr. Demento. There was a song called 99 Dead Baboons, and he started
I remember that.
Yeah, he started at the beginning. He says, you know that song by Nena, 99 Red Balloons? Well, I heard the English version, and then I had a friend tell me that they're not exactly the same, so I thought I'd write my own more accurate version, but there's a couple of words that didn't get translated quite right. And he starts out, he says, hello, Bobby, my old friend. It's good to see you once again. How's your mother? How's your aunt? How's your father? Skin diving suit. One of those words I'm not really sure about. So that led me to say, I have to do this for real with a current technology and just take it to the absolute absurd extreme. And that's what we got.
Yes, you did.
That's what we do here.
So,
Word Mangler 3000.
Thank you, Google Translate, for supporting that on the back end. You do wondrous jobs. Because, you know, when you get those voicemails translated, they're not really accurate all that either.
That was also an inspiration for this a little bit.
Yes. All right. We have patrons to thank at this point. Where's my patron song? There it is. There we go. This show is brought to you by you and supported by you. Thank you very much. What did you do? You're messing with
my
music.
That's the end of the fanfare thing.
Okay. I'll tell you a story about what happened while I was listening to Edvard Grieg the other day, too. Happy birthday. Thank you to Kyle Nishioka. Unless it's his birthday, I guess. Kyle Nishioka, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills. You guys are awesome for sending your donations to Patreon, and then Patreon forwards them on to us after they take their cut. Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, very, very much thank you. John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
John Noble.
Chris MC, because only the real John Noble donates to this show. Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorga Schrauen, John Miller Jr. Yes, that John Miller Jr.
Yeah.
Amber Elstad, and our latest Patreon, Harold McKinstry. Thank you to you. You all get special content that we record right after this show. It's open forum. It's free form discussion. It's wherever we decide to go with conversation, and send that to the Patreon people. Yes.
And it is special for sure.
There's and only you know two what? Spots left.
If you have a loved one, ask them to donate on your behalf or donate on their behalf to Technorama for the holidays. What a Christmas present that would be.
Your name here.
Only a few dollars a year. It's really what it comes to. Could be done. Anyway, so thank you. Just go over to patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. We appreciate it very, very much. Special content, our undying gratitude, and your name mentioned in the show. What could be cheaper? I mean, better than that.
Pretty darn cheap.
Hey, that's a good return on your buck.
Alrighty. to the Media Corner?
Let's go.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
Keith, I'm going to make that font a little larger for you.
The raisin things, yeah. Do you know that the Claymation has the Christmas special has the California raisin things?
Oh, dear.
A remake of DreamWorks Shrek.
Yes, 200 artists collaborated on this thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had the title half scrolled off the screen.
Their cart... Scroll down just
a touch.
Just there we go.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
What does Shrek have in common with Woody Woodpecker, Sailor Moon, and the Doughboys? The Doughboys. Their cartoons have all been remade through crowdsourced projects. Shrek Retold might qualify as the most ambitious of the bunch, at least in terms of length. It's a shot-for-shot remake of the entire 2001 feature, all 90 minutes of it.
Wow. Oh, my word.
The remake drops online November 29th.
I have to see this.
That's coming up.
Holy moly. Shrek Retold was orchestrated by 3GI, the organizers of Wisconsin's Shrek Fest, where the remake premiered over Labor Day weekend.
Ooh.
Wow. If you're thinking to yourself that this is all a bit silly, check out the video essay below by animator Marcy Lessert, who also participated in the production of the remake. Lessert offers a sharp perspective on why these kind of reanimation projects have flourished in popularity and examines Shrek Retold through various frameworks, including art history, internet crowdsourcing, appropriation art. Well, I'm going to start using that. Fan culture and media creation.
Steal pictures out of somebody else's house?
Is that the PC way of saying pirating?
Appropriation art. No, but I like the idea of that. Yeah. Looking at it through art history.
Exactly.
What are the different styles? Man, if you watch this video, there are, I'm not going to play the whole thing, but there are a ton of different styles. There's live action.
I really understand why
people do this thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to mute that for just a second so we can actually see this. There's different animation styles. There's people doing this on the computer. There's people just holding up pieces of paper over their face and doing some of this. It's really, really fascinating to see. There's people in costumes.
Yeah. It's amazing how many people have contributed to the art form of animation and storytelling.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, I was reminded of something that I saw about a month ago, and while I really appreciate the fact that this particular project has acquired, you know, or is using so many different forms of animation, I've actually been seeing people take snippets of actually established films, very successful movies, live action, and giving them an anime treatment. Mm-hmm. I saw one. The one for Star Wars, which looked amazing.
Like 3 minute episode.
It's just 3 minutes. It's just clips.
And you look at it and you go, oh, I want to see that whole movie.
Exactly. I want to see the entire thing. I want someone to fund that and do the entire thing because you get just a little bit of like the duel between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. And in the live action, it looks terrible, but in the hint of it in the animation, it looks terrifyingly great.
Ooh.
And it's like, you know, so the idea of people taking already established works and then kind of giving them a new fresh coat of paint through animation, I think is a really exciting idea. And I like to see that happen more often.
Now, when I read this, I was reminded of a project that happened a while back. I don't know if you guys seen it, called Star Wars Uncut.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had all of the, I forget the time intervals, but they had all the time intervals listed on the website and you could go and register for one of them. And it was like, it wasn't 5 minute slices, but you know, something like that. So you had these scenes and they're split up. So Chuck would take one, I would take one. And it was just like this. You would produce it with puppets, live action, you know, however high production quality you wanted or as low.
Yep.
It didn't matter. Animated. And they did the same thing. It's called Star Wars Uncut, and you can go watch it all two hours and
however many
four minutes worth of video.
Yeah,
the way they had these names lined up, it looked like these were, many of them were well-known animators as well. This wasn't, I mean, some of them were, you know, Joe on the street, and some of them were very, you know, high production, high quality, right, experienced people. So that's interesting to have that mixture.
I had to put that D20 away because I was about to rub the numbers off of it.
I do the same kind of thing.
He's sitting here
doing the Kane Mutiny thing with the D20s.
You know, now I got to say, before we go into this next article, yes, I'm looking at the comic book cover and it's supposed to say Blue Bolt. So help me, out of the corner, I thought it said Bile Bolt.
I thought it said Billy Bolt.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it does, yeah.
Billy Bolt. I just thought it said Bile.
Bile Bolt.
Lou Bolt, just Lou.
Oh, and then right down the side, it also says Blue Bolt. But
I just saw the title. Lou.
But this, my friends call Lou. Me Phlegm.
Is his brother Lou Bolt?
Is it?
From openculture.com, free download 15,000 free Golden Age comics from the Digital Comic Museum.
That's amazing.
And on the cover, they've got a wonderful edition of Blue Bolt, 10 cents, September issue. We don't know what year. Look, he's fighting off
no
a shark.
Way to know.
Volume one, number four.
The Digital Comic Museum offers free access to hundreds of pre-1959 comic books uploaded by users who often offered historical research and commentary alongside high-quality scans. The site's moderators and administrators are particularly careful to avoid posting non-public domain comics, a complicated designation, as described in this forum thread that links there. The resulting archive is devoid of many familiar comic book characters like those from Marvel, DC, or Disney.
Because the DC is the one that I would really like to be looking at. Actually, Marvel, too.
Who did the Archie comics?
Oh, I assume...
Archie comics?
Weren't they like Gold Key?
I don't remember. But those were always the one that I seemed to get my hands on. We didn't ever have enough money to go buy comics, so I went over to the neighbor's house.
Or read them in the store.
It was actually upstairs in the garage attic, but okay.
I'm trying to remember who produced those originally to begin with.
Let's see. On the other hand, because of this restriction, the archive offers an interesting window into the themes of lesser-known comics. These are the ones I usually saw. Like, I don't recognize any of these. My friends are reading cool stuff. Of the Golden Age, romance, westerns, combat, crime, supernatural, and horror. Sounds like your tagline for your show, almost.
Yeah, exactly.
The covers of the romance comics are great examples of popular arts. Realistic romances, delusions, triumphant kisses, love she didn't want.
I found out Archie originally began in 1939 as MLJ Comics.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then it says Archie, and then I see Archie Magazine, and I think it just changed over time.
MLJ, he was like a presidential candidate, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That was Spider-Man's girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting in understanding how home front American culture reflected fighting in World War II and Korea and the anxieties of the Cold War. The archive is full of titles like Fighting Yank or War Front that trade on the true stories of past combat and present day engagements. Many, like these atomic attack books from the early 1950s, have a distinctive Cold War flavor with science fictional imaginings of futuristic combat. See how the war of 1972 will be fought.
Ooh.
The war that you yourself might have to take part in.
I think I slept through that one.
Came a little sooner with Vietnam.
Yeah, exactly.
This is some interesting look at the history of this stuff. Is this the Canadian comic?
It's Canadian comics.
That's pretty good comic there, eh? Dig this crazy comic, eh? I can't see you tonight, Archibald. I just remembered I've got a date with a sailor.
Oh, dear Lord.
Oh, my.
Whoa.
Oh, my.
That is so Jessica Rabbit.
That is the comic. We're not going to show you that one on the cover. You're going to have to go to the link through the show notes at chuckchat.com/technorama.
Hey, I see some Sherlock ones in there.
A little racy. Interesting.
I've never seen that before.
Good stuff. So if you're looking, 15,000 comics.
That's amazing.
That's a lot of comics. I'm going to have to go catch up on some childhood. All right. In the Geek Library, dogs know when they don't know. Craig, you're the dog owner of the family.
Yes, I am.
Go for it.
And I'll tell you,
can you vouch for this with Juno?
I think so. So dogs know when they don't know. Because researchers have shown that dogs possess the metacognitive abilities, especially that they're aware of when they do not have enough information to solve a problem and will actively seek out more information. The reason I know some coworkers that could use that. the researchers created a test which dogs had to find a reward behind one of their own one of two fences. They found that the dogs looked for additional information significantly more often than they had not seen where the reward was hidden.
Interesting.
So
one picked up an Android phone and was on Google Maps. How do I get past this fence?
Yeah. Can you use your thumb?
Uber.
Yeah, he's looking at you. Can you use your thumbs? Can you make this happen? So researchers at the Dog Studies Lab at Max Planck Institute for Science of Human History have shown that dogs possess some of the in the field of comparative psychology, researchers study animals in order to learn about the evolution of various traits and what it can tell us about ourselves. At the Dog Studies Lab at Max Planck Institute for, why don't they just give me an acronym, project leader Julianne Brauer studies dogs to make these comparisons. In a recent study published in the Journal of Learning and Behavior, Brauer and colleague Julia Belger, now the Max Planck Institute for Human Brain Sciences, explores whether dogs have metacognitive abilities, sometimes described as the ability to know what one knows, and in particular, whether or not they're aware of the information and they have learned and whether or not they need more information for this. To test this, researchers designed an apparatus involving two V-shaped fences. A reward, whether food or a toy, would be placed by the researchers behind one of the two fences while the other researcher held the dog. Okay. In some cases, the dog could see where the reward was placed, while in others, the dog could not. The researchers then analyzed how frequently the dogs looked through a gap in the fence before choosing an option. The question was whether, like chimps and humans, the dog would check through the gap when he or she had not seen the reward or seen where it was placed. This would indicate that the dog was aware that he or she did not know where the reward was, a metacognitive ability, and would try to get more information before choosing a fence. Some researchers argue that some animals, such as dogs, may only look for extra information when searching as routinized. Instinctual behavior, and not as a result of metacognitive process. And to control for this, Brauer and Belger tested whether dogs show so-called passport effect, originally described by researcher Joseph Call, where humans were looking for something very important, for example, a passport. They will engage in more active searching and will check it for it more often than if they're looking for something less important or generic. Great apes display this same behavior. They will search for more high value of food. Thus, Brauer and Belger varied whether the dogs were looking for high or low value food in order to test whether the dogs had the same searching flexibility displayed in the passport effect. In another variation, they test whether it made a difference to the dog when they had to search for a toy or food.
Okay.
Always look in your hand first.
Yeah.
When you're right. Looking for something.
Check your dog purse. Yeah.
Where did this take place at? Where did they do this research?
Where? The Max Planck Institute for Science of Human History.
Plonk.
Where that's at. I'm not sure where that's at.
Max Planck.
He's giving you crap. Yeah. It's
yeah.
Plonk.
No, you know what? It's funny because before I actually saw this article or read it, I was thinking of the same thing because sometimes when I'm playing with my dog, she's got this little plushy duck that she will not harm. She'll tear up other toys, but she won't harm this one. And we'll play with it and stuff. And there's been times I've had it in my hand behind both hands behind my back. I take out one hand. And she looks at it, then she starts looking around, and she doesn't move anywhere. And then she'll look at me like, okay. And then I bring out the other hand, and maybe I'll switch hands. And she'll look at it. She'll look around for a minute, and then she'll look at me. And then I bring it out, and she's like, okay. You know, like she yeah, she figured it out. I had it.
She goes, hey, you're yanking my chain.
Yeah.
Dog humor.
Where am I? Yeah.
But I know that. Oh, no, I know that. But I know that that little animal has some significance for her because it's funny when after she eats, I guess she's very happy. She wants to play and she brings that little duck and she whines like with it in her mouth. And I was like, what is wrong? The first time she did that, I was like, what is wrong with Juno? So I looked online and they whine like that when they have an object that they have an emotional attachment to. Mm. And I was like, oh, so she's actually it's a good thing that she's doing that. I was like, what's wrong with the dog? So I think the dogs have, probably a little more cognitive ability than you think.
You need to obtain a grant and do lots more studies.
Yes.
One dog with the toy behind your back does not
a study make.
All right, let's do it again, Juno. Yeah, all day long.
Different dog.
Very interesting.
She is a smart dog. I'll tell you that my dog is very smart. She's a Aussie German mix. Very smart.
All right. We have one more in the Geek Library as we wind down. This is from XKCD, one of our favorite cartoons. And we're going to put that up on the screen also in Big Vision. But this is, let me make that a wee bit bigger. This tells you just how old we're getting. Man first had. Her first human airplane flight was December 17th, 1903. We're well aware of the Wright brothers and their accomplishment. And then April 12th, 1961 was the first human space flight, which was 57 years, 4 months. Their timeline then says it's been 57 years, 7 months to today. So we have had space flight longer than that gap between airplane flight. So spaceships are now older than airplanes when we flew our first spaceships.
Well,
like that's pretty
mind blowing. So it's kind of mind blowing.
Already be, at warp one now.
You'd think. Come on.
Hey, when we're still doing this podcast, 57. When we're doing this podcast 57 years from now, and we're talking about warp drive, it'd be all right.
Podcasts have been around longer than the spaceships were from the first time spaceships listened to podcasts. Wait, no.
What?
Sure.
And now a message from our sponsors.
The more you know.
So,
for whatever reason, that still makes me think of Leo Laporte, but I'm not sure why. All right. Our question of the week as we wind down. What is your favorite piece of music from a video game? How many people are... That's not exactly music. Music to my ears.
That's the only one I have right now.
Note.
Somewhere I had Tetris.
Oh, here we go.
Farmville. Nice.
I throw Mario out there.
I used to have that one. It's a ringtone, so I can't get the ringtones.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, we didn't have music in our video games. We just had missiles falling from the sky.
We're going to get banned off YouTube if we keep playing it.
We need music. We had... Space Invaders.
Yeah.
And asteroids. Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly.
Does that count as music?
Yeah. Now, the Tron game has some of the themes from the movie.
Yeah. Yes, it did. Dee, 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 dee. Yep.
Sounded just like that, too.
Which sounds more like a Wayne's World flashback. All right. We want to let you know. We're going to put this on Facebook as well. So. Let us know what your thoughts are for your favorite video game music. Anybody in there? Nobody in the chat room saying anything yet. Hello, Matt Beckwith. Good to see you on Facebook.
Yes.
We are overdue for a call with that man.
He's not out riding his bike. He's actually online for change.
It's not a bike. It's a penny farthing.
No, he rides bikes all the time.
I know. I wonder if he still owns his penny farthing. Maybe he'll let us know before the show is over.
If I'm not mistaken, I think I saw a somewhat recent video of him playing riding that thing.
All righty. We are going to conclude there. Thank you very much, Ben and Keith.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. Tell the listeners again where they can find you.
TGGeeks.com.
All right. And coming up on show 200.
On December 17th.
December 17th.
Yep. A date which will live in infamy. Wait a minute. Yes. December 17th?
Yeah.
That was the date in the XKCD cartoon. 1903. The Wright Brothers.
Oh, yeah. I guess it was.
How about that?
How about that?
Ta-da! Look, I was paying attention.
Yeah. How about that? Was that a Monday, too?
Just the way my brain works.
I have to say that Hamish Downey, that does our new sushi from Japan.
Yes.
His one of his episodes is on December 7th.
A date which will live in infamy.
From Japan.
Oh,
interesting.
My.
Yes. Yes.
I thought, okay. Oh, can't make this stuff up.
Nope. Kind of writes itself. That takes us to the end. Thank you very much, Craig.
Oh, no, thank you.
And we appreciate all your love. You can find all our good information over at chuckchat.com/technorama, where we have this show and about 550 others that you can find. You know, I think they're all still there, too. Dating back to early May of 2005.
Technorama.
We've been doing it longer than Man Spaceflight.
The podcast for geeks.
Yeah, there's going to be a timeline on there for Technorama. Yeah. Technorama's been around longer. You can find us, if you want to send us your answer to your music or corrections to this show, whatever, 707-530-2428. You can reach us on that listener line or email us. But all that is, again, over at the website, chuckchat.com/technorama. We hope to see you there. And until then, Craig, give us that music to our ears, the binary high five.
10.